So, I am joined now by the fantastic people behind the new film Brightwood, which is coming to UK screens, available to rent or buy on digital platforms this week on March the 21st. So, I am very excited to be joined by the film's writer and director, Dane Elkar. Hope I'm saying that name right.
Hi. Yes, you are.
Oh, that's great. Hello, Dane. And I'm also joined by the film's two lead actors, Dana Berger and Max Wertendyke. Again, I hope I'm saying those names correctly as well.
Amazingly, just absolutely
Perfectly well.
perfect.
Wow.
Thanks so much for having us. We're thrilled to be here.
Oh, well, it's a pleasure to have you. I have, but before we start, I just want to give special thanks to Dana in particular. You were the one who reached out to me on TikTok
Oh.
and said, "Oh, we're releasing our film in the UK, and would you be interested in a screener?" I'm never one to turn down a screener, so I said, "Hell yeah!" And I looked up your work. Obviously, for those who don't know, Dana's quite an accomplished actress. She's been in shows like Orange is the New Black and other stuff as well. So it's just like, oh wow, this is actual like star recognition right here. So I thought like, hey, if there's an opportunity to interview for the show as well. So I thought, yeah, why not? Let's see what happens. So thank you very much, Dana, for making all of this happen.
You're so
Sorry,
welcome.
Jack, you also got stuck with both Dane and me too.
well, you guys are great too, but
Yeah.
it
Thank you,
really is
Dana.
Dana who's the instigator of this. So yeah, that's really cool. So thank you very much, Dana.
Totally welcome.
And I'll be saying later on where you can find all these wonderful people on various socials at the end. But yeah, let's get on with the interview. So I should first start off by saying congratulations on making such a fascinating film, and thank you all so much for joining me on the show. And so I guess starting with you, Dane, could you explain how this concept came about and how you were able to get it made?
I had done a short film back in 2018 called The Pond, which was basically kind of like an experimental version of this film to kind of see if the plot device would work. The idea that someone would get stuck in a kind of pond and going around in circles. And I mean, initially I just kind of had this vision of someone getting stuck, not able to get out of, and I would take my daughter on these jogs around this local pond that I would jog around. As I was making that short film, I always kind of thought how interesting it would be to have this couple and kind of throw them into this environment, especially a couple that's kind of on the rocks in their relationship, and kind of see how that would play out. And I had this kind of vague thought that that might be kind of a kind of a interesting metaphor for a crumbling relationship. And and then years later, Max and I, we'd been working on a number of projects, and we were in the middle of something that kind of fell through during the pandemic. And I had kind of been, I think I'd told him about the idea a few times about kind of this couple getting stuck going around the pond, and he had seen the short film. And eventually I just decided I'd give it a shot and write the script, and I showed it to Max, and that's kind of how it all started.
Well, that's pretty cool. And obviously, Dana and Max, what were your thoughts upon reading the script that led you to decide that this was something that you guys wanted to do?
Yeah, so sort of as Dane alluded to, Dane and I have worked on a bunch of stuff. We actually met many years ago working one of the last video stores here in New York City. And so we've had like a long amount of time where we've collaborated on things. And I'm always looking for opportunities to collaborate with Dane. We're working together on his next film as well. And I just think he's a wonderful writer and director. And I liked the short film. And so when Dane shared this with me, I just thought, not only did I think like, oh wow, this is gonna be really fun and exciting, but given where the world was, we had Dane and I had been working on this other project. We thought it was gonna go. The pandemic happened, it fell apart. And I for one certainly like felt the deep creative need to make something and make something with people who I loved. And we had this opportunity and this script, although not written with a global pandemic in mind, was possible to shoot during that time. You know, we shot in May of 2021. And so Dan and I sort of, you know, we looked at it and said, okay, well, we felt devastated about that first thing falling through. We were like, well, we're going to make something. And let's make something that we can control, something that we don't have to ask permission to make, something that we can make with our own resources.
And just to add, to use that environment as kind of like an artistic limitation, you know, to use the limitations to our benefit in some ways. So we only can have a few actors. Let's use that. We can only have one location. Let's use that. Sorry, Max, go ahead.
No, that's great. And, you know, so I read the script and Dane and I started talking and said, okay, well, the really first big question is who's going to play Jen, you know? And Dana and I had done a play a couple years prior and had just had such an amazing fucking time working on that together. And so Dana really just popped immediately into my brain. And I said to Dana, I was like, listen.
He said to Dane about Dana. It's so hard, you know. Yeah. You know, who he's talking about. Continue, Max.
Well, I can imagine the confusion. Yes. Yeah.
I said to Dane, I was like, listen, I know a woman who I think is the perfect Jen. Her name is Dana. And I said, listen, I know, you know, you have to meet her. You have to talk to her, obviously, you know, don't promise me anything, but at least have a conversation. And I think, you know, we set up a time for them to talk and they took it from there.
That's incredible. And obviously, Daniel, what were your initial thoughts on being approached like that and getting to really know this character that you play?
Well, like Max said, I mean, I remember where I was when I got a text from him about this movie. I was in a Kohl's, actually, in upstate New York. I don't know if they have Kohl's in the UK, but it's like this just big department. I don't know. Like it's like JCPenney or something like that.
Okay,
But you know what I mean? Yeah. And it was December of 2021 and it was December of 2020. It was bleak. Like it was a bleak time. And he sends me this text message that says, you wouldn't be interested in working on a indie horror movie with me in the woods, would you? And I was like, is that a joke? Of course I would. Like, first of all, I love Max, obviously. And we have so much fun working together. And the idea of like, oh, you just want me to come actually like do some art with you in a time when we've all been so isolated and nobody's been working. And on top of that, I read the script. First of all, I would have done it. I don't know. I probably would have done it pretty much if it was anything because I was so desperate for like human connection. But then I read the script and I was like, oh, this is actually good. Like, this is actually really interesting. And it's such a challenge to be one of two people in an entire movie, you know? And I think that like, that was so, so exciting for both me and Max to get to actually like do, like that's so much meaty work. And I think that like Dane was so open to having it be collaborative, which I think is very important for this kind of a movie where we are building something around two people and their relationship with each other. So it was just, you know, it was an actor's dream to get that offer.
Yeah, suddenly it sounds the sound of, you know, being invited to the middle of woods in the middle of nowhere with a couple of guys doesn't seem to sound like the red flag that it's.
You know what? Wow. You know what? I'm a guy's girl. So like I said, like do what you will with me.
I mean, you did see what her face massager looked like. You know, one of the things I said to Dan, you know, when we were thinking about who was going to be involved in this project, you know, I mean, one of the top things that was important though, was that people were sort of down to clown, meaning that, you know, we didn't have big trailers. We didn't have, you know, a limo to pick people up and take them back and forth from set. You know, I mean, we were roughing it. It was a real indie production. I mean, Dane himself must have worn seven hats during the course of production. I wore many hats. I mean, people were really, you know, we were there because we loved it and because we wanted to make it. And what's been so satisfying about that is that the final result has resonated with folks. And so, you know, we made this thing because we loved it. And it's turned out that some other people have as well. And that's really satisfying. I mean, you'll read your, we haven't read your review yet. So who knows?
Yeah,
maybe we're not talking to part of the converted. I don't know.
But I think something something interesting about the timing of all of this, like, you know, this pandemic happens, we go out and we make this movie in the woods of 2021, really bare bones. And then the writer's strike happens and the SAG strike happens. And there's suddenly this focus on, you know, moving away from big streaming and big, you know, budget movies and like trying to put your attention on indie films and doing it for the work and all that stuff. And so our film came out in the US during those strikes. Was it during the writer's strike too? I don't remember.
Yeah, it was during both.
Both strikes. And so it was just interesting to have a film to present to be like, you know, I don't know, everybody was talking about Mark Ruffalo and what he was saying about indie films. And a lot of people were talking about indie films and to be like, well, yeah, like we went and did it. We went and really like made the indiest indie you could find. And there were a lot of people at that time that were really willing to watch, which was cool because, you know, anyway, that was non sequitur, but.
I think it's worth bringing up because I mean I don't know if you guys watched the Oscars over the weekend. This happened over the weekend. His speech, you know, for American Fiction, he was going on about, you know, how Hollywood just needs to make like 50 like $4 million films instead of one big $200 million film, which is right on the money because, you know, as someone who thought The Flash, which cost like 200 plus million, absolutely sucked, I think that's definitely worth putting all your money into all these things. And it's kind of why I feel that a studio like Blumhouse, for example, they don't like put all their eggs into one basket. They just spread them out. You know, if one isn't a success, fine, then they've got all these other like small low budget ones as well. I mean, they had like this year alone, they've had like Night Swim and Imaginary, and I think a few others as well. They've not made on not very good budgets, and quality aside, you know, they've still made their money back, which is honestly, I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about the Blumhouse model in particular, but from my point of view, it's a smart business mind, especially in an industry that does tend to like put so many eggs into one basket in the hopes that it might succeed, but it might actually fail.
Go ahead, Dan.
I like about that too is that a lot of those films get theatrical releases, and that theatrical is kind of coming back in a way to help market those films, and then eventually they do go over into kind of like SVOD or TVOD platforms and digital on demand. But I do think that hopefully more films will go into that direction, and you'll see kind of another surge of smaller independent films having that platform and that the ability to have those marketed to a wider audience. Horror, though, is that genre that it kind of allows a company like Blumhouse to do that. Now, what would be great too is if you could go have that and still have, you know, kind of the drama or, you know, this another types of other films. We will see. But I do think in general, that's a great, they've been doing great.
I could talk all day about like what I think about the sort of studio system and the indie system and what the sort of tough, you know, financing independent films is hard. It's, you know, the model that used to exist doesn't exist. Like everyone in media and entertainment, what used to work is shifting because of technology. So we could talk about that forever. But I think, you know, a lot of people in the driving seat of these largest studios, you know, everyone wants to make the safe bet. And this is exactly what Court Jefferson was talking about, that I think what I see again and again, the films that interest me are ones that feel like interesting or original or take an idea that feels familiar and, you know, tweaks it in a certain way that makes it feel both recognizable but fresh and new, you know, and those are the kind of films I'm interested in making as a producer and as an actor, as an artist. And they're the films that I'm interested in seeing as an audience member. And I don't think I'm the only person out there who's interested in watching those kind of movies.
No, absolutely not. I think more people are really starting to come about to the fact that, you know, they don't want to be talked down to, like they don't want to, you know, just see a bunch of flashy effects. They want actual kind of quality, which is weird to say that, you know, the first every first and foremost, what every filmmaker I feel sets out to achieve is some kind of quality. And the fact that audiences, oh, we just gave Best Picture to a 3-hour film that's mainly just people sitting in rooms and talking. And, you know, and not only that, but it ended up grossing almost $1 billion worldwide. So, and even the bigger, like even the bigger budgeted blockbuster stuff like Barbie, I really think it's fascinating what Greta Gerwig did with that. They took an IP, but they didn't like make it this really kind of like cynical cash in. They actually really did something with it. They really spoke to today's audience. I mean, I don't know how you feel about those films as in general, but I think filmmakers, including you guys, and definitely are taking much more risks than, you know, they used to, because I think we reached a high point. I think it was around 2019 before the pandemic came in that, you know, we were getting all these big like films that are grossing like $1 billion worldwide, but most of them were just kind of like, I mean, we don't really talk much about the one films that made $1 billion back in 2019. We just remember how they were just big marketing. I think there was like the glass ceiling that just kind of think, oh, now all studio films are cost like 200, 300 million. I think like Indiana Jones was almost 300 million. I know
Oh, it's
Fast.
something insane. It's
Yeah, like, and it's like
something,
far.
it's unsustainable. I mean,
Yeah,
it's just, it's not a business model.
No, it's not a business model at all. And I think it's I think people are now coming around to that. Yeah, you're like, I mean, again, going back to like all the flashy visual effects, going back to the Oscars, Godzilla Minus One just won that award, and it cost like
15
15
mil.
million
Yeah.
dollars, which is incredible. I mean, that film is fantastic, and the effects are top notch. And I mean, when you compare it to something like The Flash, I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen that, but the opening scene with the babies is like, I've not seen a baby that terrifying on screen since the end of 2001, A Space Odyssey. Like, it was terrible. And that movie cost 200 million. I'm sorry, that movie just blew. I'm sorry. So that's.
Well, just
Something, a point that you made, which was you said we're not, you know, these movies are costing tons of money and we're not really talking about them, you know? And I think that that's a really interesting point because something that Max and Dane, you know, constantly said when we were making this film was like, we want people to have opinions about the film when they watch it, whether they hate it or whether they love it, debate about it or striking some sort of chord, even if it's a chord of like absolute, like this film is not for me, is better than a film that just like everybody's like fine with and nobody wants to discuss. So like to your point, I think that in, you know, in general, indie films are more likely to do that, or smaller films, you know, because they take risks, like we're all saying, as opposed to these huge movies where it's like, well, we know what it's going to do, we know where it's going to go, and they're playing it
I mean,
safe.
I think we definitely had an idea that there was going to be some risky stuff in the script, even in the terms of how the story is told and how it unfolds. I think always Max and I, when we're working in this, and then later when Dana came on, everything was quality. How can we make this better? How can we, you know, get the scenes moving forward? Which is one of the reasons, you know, when you don't have a lot of money, you have to really rely on your collaborators, and there has to be a passion. And it is true that we came into this with the drive of wanting to make a feature film, and it was very strong for a number of reasons because of the time and all of that. And that led to kind of this wonderful collaboration, where I brought Max and Dana kind of in early, and we would do these kind of workshops on Zoom, where we would go over the part and talk about the part, and I would kind of go off and rewrite, and they would read, and I wanted them to be very comfortable in the language and with their characters and who they are, and give them that freedom to discover it. Not just, you know, within the words, with what they're saying in their dialogue, and that's all without having been in that environment at all. So we're rehearsing. We did not actually go to the location until we were filming in the location.
One of the things I love about Dane as a writer and also as a director is, you know, Dane's very confident about his vision. You know, he's is secure in how he envisions a story, envisions a project, while also simultaneously being very open to that conversation. And so, you know, we would read, we would do these workshops, and Dane would go and rewrite, you know, and what it meant for us, for Dane and I as actors, it meant when we showed up on set, by the time we showed up on set, you know, almost everything coming out of our mouths felt easy. You know, one of the hardest things for an actor to do is sometimes you get handed these scripts where people don't talk like people, and you find yourself having to do a lot of sort of acrobatics to try and cover up for the what I think is the lack of writing, you know? And you say like, okay, how do we try to make this sound real? Or how do I have to, and it's always an odd moment, you know, it's like you're jumping the shark in your mind. And what was fun is by the time we got there, things had been rewritten enough and we'd had enough experience with the script that we were able to get out there and play, you know? And so we would do a sort of take the way that we had determined. And then, you know, Dana and I spent hours and hours and hours scheduling this movie. I mean, we literally scheduled this movie down to the lens change, because we knew there was such limited time. We couldn't afford to burn any. I mean, we would say like, great, okay, we have 6 minutes to switch from the 35 to the 70, whatever it was. And of course we got out there and Dane had to play it all by ear and, you know, figure that out. But it meant that we created an environment in which we were really fucking prepared and really free. And having that combination was extremely satisfying as a performer, to be able to go there and sort of say, great, like, what if we did the scene this way? Or like, you know, let's see what happens. Let's really play in the moment. And because Dana and I have this longstanding relationship, I mean, working with Dana is really fun. She's such
Dana. Now we're talking about Dana.
Yes, Dana. You would never know that I went to that I studied speech at school. You know, working with Dana, she's such a present actor. She's very alive in the moment, and so things don't die with her, you know, when you're in partnership with her, and it's really fun. So you get these, what I think feel like these crackly moments of interaction between us that even sometimes I was surprised at how they happened, you know?
There was like a YouTube channel that did a review of our movie in Spain, was it? I don't remember, but they were asserting that like we were an off-screen couple in real life, and that's why our relationship felt so believable on camera, which is not true. Max is married to a wonderful other woman. But it's just like we really enjoy working with each other. So that's, it's fun to hear that people think that.
Well, it just goes to show, you know, even when you guys are arguing, there is that kind of spark between you, that kind of like, it's a mixture of like real ferocity, but also like there's still some kind of like connection there, even if it is waning. Mm-hmm. So that was something that really stuck out to me about the film. And because since the film predominantly does take place in this one location and seemingly stuck in this one point in time, you talked about it a little bit earlier, but what was the general process with shooting in that location, and how'd you go about ensuring like continuity with all the natural elements like the weather and all the other sorts
Good
of
question.
Stuff like that?
Well, basically I knew from having made the short that in order for it to work visually, that there would have to kind of be these markers in place that we had. So we had, for example, like the no swimming sign, the trash can, there's a kind of a tree area. And I felt that it was very important that the audience kind of know the landscape. So we take Dana around the whole kind of trail first and we see it, because we have to be very familiar with this trail that they're on and the environment. And then that allows me to kind of take them and do different things. But we recognize that that is, you know, the location and that they're going around in circles. That was very important.
It's worth noting swimming sign was a thing that Dane made in his own backyard. Same thing with the garbage can. You know, I mean, these, you know, some of them were natural things, but it was really an element and a construction of the story.
Yeah. And they were written into the script, because then the script was broken down in these sections so that we knew how we would film it, because it wasn't filmed in order. It was still filmed. When you see a majority of the scene, say like at the no swimming sign, that was all filmed together. And then we would move to the trash can because we'd have to move all the camera equipment and everything. So it took a lot of planning to get that right. And, and I leave it to these wonderful actors that they had to kind of figure out where they were, you know, every time we were, shooting a different scene and who they were, what character they were, potentially. In terms of the weather, we really lucked out. It only rained once or so. However, you're always kind of fighting the light and kind of, you know, how that is going to remain in terms of continuity. But we really lucked out. What we were not prepared for was the bugs and, you know, the animals. There was a lot of ticks. It was a lot of mosquitoes. So that was kind of an adventure out there in the
woods. It's worth noting that there's a couple of takes that I went out with the crew and we did some pre-shooting. If you watch the film, you'll see there's a couple points that sort of required a different look than the actual film. And so we went and shot those scenes, you know, a couple of weeks prior to shooting. And we shot in May. And so right in May, we were in the woods of northern New Jersey, the leaves are changing. And so when Dane were out there the first time, you know, we were looking at the leaves and they were just starting to come in. Yeah. And by the time we came back to shoot the principal photography, you know, the leaves had really filled out. And I think both Dane and I had this moment of like, oh, fuck. Like
there was probably a 2 or 3 week period where I just had a panic attack the whole time where I was like, please leaves grow. Come on, you know, grow, please. Because, we wanted just enough leaves to be growth. So that it would look like the forest was full. However, it worked out quite nicely that there, if we had waited just a few more weeks, it would have been so covered, the canopy, that the light wouldn't come through. So it was really a perfect situation.
And, you know, and just to your other question, you know, Dane, we went and, you know, got permits to shoot there. We worked through the town of Rockaway. It was like very accommodating and very helpful, you know, and got the permits to shoot there. And, you know, there would be people walking around the park and we'd sort of say, hey, hi, can you guys be quiet? You know, we're just in the middle of a scene here. You know, there's these very funny signs that we put up, you know, back then the film was still called The Pond, and say, you know, filmmakers in their native environment, you know, please be quiet. The scariest thing to us is,
it was very common to set up a shot and then way on the other side of the pond, there'd be a fisherman that I didn't notice. And then we'd have to figure out what to do. We have to go run and talk to them. Please, you know, please, just for a little bit.
For those people listening who haven't seen the movie yet, like part of the conceit is that me and Max are the only two people in this environment and there's no animals, there's no nothing. And so really creating that sense in around a pond where there actually were lots of animals and lots of people everywhere.
The geese. Jeez.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it could have worked out. You know, maybe that fisherman and something, that could be a version of Max's character, you know, just at some point he just decided, you know, screw this jogging stuff. I'm just gonna go fishing.
I'm gonna take a fishing.
Very zen.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's come to peace with it.
That was the zen version. You know, that's fine.
And one of the things I was really fascinated by with this film is that, you know, at its heart, it's the story of a couple whose relationship seems to have run its course. So as filmmakers and actors, why do you feel it was important to have this be at the center of an otherwise unsettling narrative?
You know, for me, it was the main focus was always the relationship. And I was going to use the time loop elements of the time paradox as just a way to focus in on this relationship, which is kind of crumbling. And, you know, one of the things that I love about, you know, time loops or time paradox narratives is that it kind of allows us to look at something that's very truthful and very real from a different lens, from a different angle, to give us a different perspective of something that's very real to us, which is relationships and the people that we love. And the idea of, you know, going around in circles over and over again in a relationship seems real, even though it's a physical impossibility. We all kind of seem to know what that feels like. That was kind of where it started. And then just kind of getting these characters into that situation and kind of seeing how it played out. And it was a kind of a wonderful writing experience in that way.
One of the things I loved about these characters is that, you know, unlike some other time loop films, you know, it's not like Jen and Dan are physicists or ex-military. You know, they're not uniquely qualified to deal with this circumstance more than anyone else. I mean, they're really just normal basic people who are in this absurd situation. And I think it allows us to really focus on what's happening between them. And as an actor, that's so much more fun. You know, it's like, what's happening with my relationship with this woman in this moment? You know, as you sort of said before, it's, you know, this relationship is kind of run its course, but these people are stuck together. And what does it mean to have to live a life with a person that you've created a life together, but you're growing apart? And what does it mean to have to sort of devour or destroy previous versions of who you were in order to sustain that, in order to, in this case, literally survive?
Yeah, I mean, it's very much like the Marriage Story of like Groundhog Day type films. So
And it explores that kind of cycle too, right? So it's like, you know, you're on a long enough timeline in a relationship, you've seen so many different versions of these people that you're living with. And how that, you know, changes over time, and you see yourself going kind of like up and down through the, like, I love you, I can't stand you type of thing. And that all led itself again to having that kind of different angle where we could look at that. And all of that is, it was just fascinating to me. So.
And Dana, anything to add to that?
No.
That's fair. I mean, I just thought, you know, I just wanted to give you like fair playing
field. Yeah, I appreciate that. I'll get the next one.
Fair enough. It's just the Marriage in Crisis movie of time loop movies. I mean, we've had like a slasher version of that with Happy Death Day, and like the big comedies like Groundhog Day and Palm Springs. So this was a unique one, to say the least. And you know, looking at all the other things, and that there are also plenty of mysterious things throughout that constantly keep the viewer guessing. And I won't spoil it for anyone who's listening, but interestingly, very few of them are fully explained. So what do you feel retaining that sense of mystery for the whole throughout the whole film adds to the overall experience?
You know, none of them, I think if you watch it and think about it, the things that are in there are in there for a reason. None of it was kind of a real red herring per se. But again, I also never had the idea that I was going to solve the mystery at the end of it. That was not, to me, it was not the point of the story. Again, the story was Dan and Jen's story. And so I was always going to end this story from their perspective in their relationship and where they are at, both physically and mentally, which is not necessarily a great spot per se, but that was always going to be the conclusion. It wasn't going to be kind of like Max said, there wasn't going to be a secret thing where we realize one of them's a scientist, or it's all of these kind of elements that are there because the genre and the plot kind of needs them to be there. But again, we're following this couple through this, and that's how it was always set up.
Nice. And I think that brings me about to the end of the questions about the film. I only managed to think of only a few, but my final question for you guys is, it's more of a general run, but since you're all obviously such film-minded people, I mean, to go full Letterboxd here, like, what was the last film that you saw, and what did you like or not like about it? And just that kind of discussion.
The very last film that I saw?
I'm sort of embarrassed by the last one I
saw. Oh, wow, I'm excited.
Okay. Oh, what's that now?
I watched Ricky Stenicki. Oh. Last time with John Cena.
Yes.
And,
oh, yeah.
You know what? Actually, I had a really good time. I thought it was, I find John Cena oddly charming. As someone I think on Letterboxd wrote, like, The Rock would never. And
those people haven't seen Tooth Fairy.
fair enough. But seeing John Cena climb out of a window in a Britney Spears outfit licking booze off a piece of cardboard is pretty priceless. And, you know, it's been fun to see. You know, we were talking earlier about what films belong in theaters and what are big films for small films. You know, one of the things that I have enjoyed from the streamers is just seeing the sort of resurgence of comedies and romantic comedies, and, you know, like those films that I guess people are having trouble box office wise in terms of theaters, but they're really sometimes fun to sit and watch. So that was the last film I watched. For this audience, the film I watched prior to that was the Benson-Moorhead resolution. So I just,
ooh,
I
that's a good one.
And so on the other end of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely see a lot of Benson and Moorhead, you know, in Brightwood as well. I mean, it's very, I mean, I don't know how you feel about that comparison, Dane, you know, but
no, I think they're great, great filmmakers. I don't know how much, like, what I admire so much is I remember seeing The Endless, or is it Endless? Yeah,
The Endless, yeah.
And just what they could do with the low budget and kind of being inspired by that. So yeah, I enjoy their films. I love the comparison. Gosh, the last film that I watched was a rewatch of No Country for Old Men.
And no, that's good.
Because I'm a fan of Roger Deakins and his podcast, so I was just going back to look at the lighting.
Yeah, I'm like, it's I mean,
nerd.
Nerd. I mean, Roger Deakins is such a phenomenal talent as well. I can't believe him. It took him so long to get his proper dues at the Oscars. But I mean, what I love about No Country for Old Men, I mean, that's a film. I remember seeing that when I was a teenager. Like, my dad took me to see it in the cinema. It was like, oh, well, this is like a very fucking like violent and kind of disturbing film.
I saw it in the theaters too, though I was not a teenager. I was much older. But yeah, I mean, the suspense in that is fantastic, and how they keep that suspense level high throughout the entire thing. And a brilliant, brilliant movie. But yeah, you know, it's funny. I've been so busy, I have not seen that. So that was my last rewatch. That was the film that I think watched most recently.
No, I think that's a good one to choose, because it's for my money, it's probably the Coen brothers' best movie. I mean, I say that just having recently watched Ethan Coen's Drive Away Dolls. Wasn't the biggest fan, wasn't the biggest fan in the world, but you know, I appreciate he's trying to go back to that area when he and Joel were doing like Raising Arizona and Big Lebowski, all those like weird wild out comedies. But yeah, No Country for Old Men, it's a damn good movie. And how it about is. You, Dana? Did you what was the last film that you saw, and if you liked it or not?
So I'm in the middle of watching a movie. It's not often that I can just sit down for like 2.5 hours and watch something, because whatever. So I'm watching this in two sittings, but I'm in the middle of Everything Everywhere All at Once, because I never saw it last year.
Damn, that's a short movie.
It's not short. I kind of like have an hour at the end of my day where I like watch something, and if it's going to be a movie, like, you know,
Dana's
what I'm saying?
Like, anyway. Everything Everywhere 2 days in a row.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty good.
So it's not short. It's 2.5 hours. I feel like that's like medium.
Oh, God.
It's about average for a big major film now. Yeah. I think like it's saying, I mean, people are saying like, oh, films are too long. It's just like, I always feel like a film's always as long as it needs to be. Like, I mean, your film's only like 80 something minutes, and honestly, I think it was pretty perfect length, honestly, for that kind of film that you were telling.
Thank you.
And
right.
Yeah, and Everything Everywhere, it's the same thing, because I mean, it packs so much in, as you're clearly finding out right now. I mean, I don't know what part of the film you're up to right now, but it's
I actually have like 30 minutes left or 40 minutes left, so I've seen a lot of it. Okay, what, Max? So what?
I don't know, the idea of just stopping with 30 minutes. I love you. I would never be able to do it myself. That's all. I just would never be able to do it.
I think I was crying for the last 30 minutes.
Me too.
It was like just
in the theater.
Yeah, it's crazy. Right.
It kind of gets this like nonstop like crying.
Well, I mean, that's as interesting.
Gotten to the crying part yet.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it's interesting as well, because obviously the Daniels, I mean, they got their big start in independent film as well. They obviously did Swiss Army Man. And before that, they're known as like music video directors. And I think one of them directed another film, The Death of Dick Long, I think it's called. But obviously, those are filmmakers that got their start in independent film as well. And obviously, then they hit the mainstream with Everything Everywhere All at Once. And obviously, it wins them Best Picture and like A24's biggest grossing film to date. And it's just like, I think that's another example of just audiences really kind of wanting to be challenged with all sorts of like really out there wacky ideas. You know, I mean, that film takes the multiverse angle and just runs with it, you know, like it was, I mean, it's just incredible what they pulled off. And again, it's a very small film when you think about it. A lot of it takes place in this
office building.
Exactly. I mean, yeah.
Dane and I were talking about this. We were like thinking about, like, you know, when you think about a movie like that and you start budgeting and you think about it, it's like, yeah, you need that big scene in the auditorium with all the people. But, you know, 80% of that film is in like an office park, you know, and that's it. I just always love, you know, imagining someone walking into a room and saying like, great, we got this great movie and Jamie Lee Curtis has hot dog fingers and like there's a weird hot dog finger sex scene. And you know, like, and having someone, an executive, be brave enough to, you know, we were talking about original material, to say like
they wrote that in after they got the money.
You know, but either way, it's like, you know, okay, like a laundromat kung fu movie versus the IRS, or you know, like a movie about existential dread. I mean, that's what, you know, I love that movie because I thought it was like one of the best arguments against like cynical fatalism. Because I think it gives cynical fatalism its due. It suggests that like being a cynical fatalist is a very fair way to feel about the universe. And I think the film doesn't pretend that it's not, about why it's worth accepting more than that.
Absolutely, okay. Yeah. Can you guys hear me? Hello?
I think I froze there for a second.
I don't know what happened, but yeah. No, honestly, those are all great suggestions. I know I kind of ended the interview on like a basic note, but I think it's interesting because obviously, you know, we've talked so much about you know, the film that you all put together, and I think it's fair game. I mean, what I do as a reviewer, like I enjoy talking about films in general with other people, just kind of get more of a sense of who they are and what their tastes are. And obviously you guys have got great taste. I mean, even Ricky Stanicky. So one of the things that's really helped me over the lot, because I'm someone who has you know, autism, and talking about film, writing about film has definitely helped me to really become more social in life. It's definitely helped me, you know, develop bonds that I still have to this day with friends and family, and getting to talk about it with like interesting people like yourselves is, you know, you're really, it's not just, you know, fun for me to do, and I've loved hearing you guys talk, but it's also necessary because I feel like really finding that one thing, in this case film, and really talking about that with other people, just to kind of, for me anyway, gives a real kind of connection. And that's something, for me anyway, I know it's different for a lot of other people in the spectrum, but it's really encouraging to see that there are other people out there, probably even more so than I am, that have this really kind of eclectic knowledge and fascination for the world of film. And it's so interesting to hear you talk about, like, not just what you guys did on your stuff, but also the incredible hard work of other artists. And I feel that there's, you know, a real lack of, you know, just encouragement just in general. I mean, when you go online, it's all like, oh, I can't believe Emma Stone won over Lily Gladstone. You know, she gave the better performance. It's like, I mean, yeah, they were both excellent in their films, but you know what? Emma Stone is phenomenal in Poor Things, and Lily Gladstone's excellent in Killers of the Flower Moon. And I think, like, there isn't conversation anymore online, especially on film Twitter. So I think this is just my roundabout way of saying, you know, I enjoy things like this because I enjoy, like, actually talking with like-minded people and having a proper honest to God conversation without judgment, and just having a goddamn good time with it. So
yeah. Well,
to add to that, you know, when I was younger, we would go see movies and then we'd go to a coffee shop and we would discuss the hell out of them for hours on end. And that was the way it was. And then that discourse about film and the love of film and how it was just, you know, in life, it was so much a part of everyday conversation and an appreciation of the art form, and films of all sorts. And so I really appreciate what you're doing by being one of the people that really keeps this alive and keeps it going. So I thank you so much for inviting us on, and talking about our film Brightwood. And I think you're doing great. And let's keep the conversation going and keep the discourse going about movies, because we do love movies, don't we?
We love them.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think it's a bad time for me to say, actually, I gave your movie a 1-star review. I'm joking.
But be honest, after this lovely conversation, we've moved up at least to 1.5 stars, yeah. Right?
No. It's couldn't be farther from the truth. I did give a very good review, and reviews will be able to listen to it on the actual Film Feeder podcast. This is going to be a special episode, I think, because I think talking to you guys has been really good. I think this is going to have to be its own special bonus episode now. So I'll just have to put like little snippets of it in the actual podcast and just say like, hey, you want to hear the rest of this awesome conversation? Subscribe on Patreon, which of course you all can do, dear listeners. If you go to patreon.com/filmfeeder, you can sign up to all sorts of little tiers and get some tasty treats like early access to certain episodes and all sorts of stuff. So I mean it's it's part of the hustle now, I'm afraid. But what about you guys? I mean, I'm sure all these listeners will be very interested to hear where they can find you on like all the social medias and stuff. So anything you want to plug right here?
I have social media at Dane Elkar on various things. However, I don't do very much as much as I used to, I guess. So I am there. Please follow if you wish.
That's fine.
Dana is the real social media star.
Well, that's how we're here.
Yes.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah. You found me on TikTok, which is last place I ever expected to be approached by someone, especially someone who was in a hit Netflix show. So that's very, very surreal to me. So well, obviously, Dana, you're the real social media ruler on here. So I mean, where can all the lovely listeners find you?
I'm Dana Merrill Berger on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, all the things. That's where, that's just Dana Merrill Berger, and you should find it.
Dana Merrill Burgle, Burger. Sorry. That's been a long conversation. And Max,
similar to Dane, I've found myself more online since we've been making this film, because it's a very useful tool to communicate with people and, you know, get the word out and also to learn what other people are making. So, but really, if you want to find me, it's at my last name, Wertendyke, at Wertendyke on Instagram. Or, you know, if you got questions, you can write me at max@noblegasmedia.com, which is, that's really like, if you want to communicate or chat, shoot me an email. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, and I'll be putting all those links and handles in the episode description, and all the Film Feeder's handles and links are in there as well. So, yeah, follow all of us. And, guys, thank you all so much for joining me. This has been...
Thank you.
This has been
awesome. Thank you for having us. So much.
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm so excited, and thank you. I mean, hopefully... hopefully word will get round about this, and hopefully people will listen to it. I mean, Max, you said earlier, you know, you had listened to a couple of episodes, which kind of took me by surprise.
No, like any good actor, one likes to be prepared for the circumstances they're going into. So, once we knew, I was like, I wanted to hear a couple episodes, and they were fucking great. I just thought you were great. I thought... the way you talked about the films and just seemed really interesting and smart, and that's nice. You know, sometimes you can, sometimes you get people who are willing to pontificate with no point, and I really did not feel that was the case in listening to you. So, bravo.
Oh Lord, like the people that get accepted onto Rotten Tomatoes, and they're just like the biggest hacks out there. Like, I think Armon White's just been like going on for years, and it's just like, ugh.
Listen, I love every one of our Rotten Tomatoes reviewers who gave us a fresh score. Everyone who didn't can suck it.
I mean, that's one way of putting it. Yeah. It's like, and yeah, no, I think, yeah, guys, I know I'm repeating myself, but Dana Berger, Dane Alkar, Max Wertendyke, it's been a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for joining me on this show. And thank you very much, dear listener, for listening to this very special episode. And once again, you can find Brightwood on various digital platforms here in the UK from March 21st, I believe. I don't know who's distributing it over here, but it will be available on
Cinephobia release it.
Ah, thank you very much, Dane. And so it'll be available on, I'm sure, on Amazon, Sky Store, Rakuten, Google Play, all that, YouTube, all those big places. So check it out there. And until next time, I'm Jack Martin, your film chef extraordinaire, whetting your appetite for film each and every week. That's all for now. See you next time. Now hold on just a minute, you didn't think I was going to end this episode without actually giving my thoughts on the film, did you? Well, allow me to prove how wrong you are, for after the enlightening conversation I've just had, here is my official review for Brightwood. In recent years, the time loop concept that Groundhog Day once popularised has seeped its way into numerous subgenres, from slashers to rom-coms to sci-fi action blockbusters, many of which follow similar patterns even if the contexts are vastly different from one another. However, filmmaker Dane Elkar's feature debut Brightwood, an expansion of his 2018 short film The Pond, fuses the time loop concept with both a pretty freaky metaphysical horror and a most unexpected other type of movie, the marriage and crisis drama, like films like Kramer vs. Kramer and Marriage Story, which provides the icing on the already unnerved cake. The film starts as married couple Jen and Dan, played by Dana Berger and Max Wertendyke respectively, are heading out on a morning jog together. From their fiery hostility toward one another, as well as references to some embarrassing moments from a party the night before, it's clear that their relationship is seriously on the rocks, and that they can barely stand to be beside one another, let alone jogging in unison. However, once they take their jog to a secluded pond, Jen and Dan soon find themselves unable to find the path back to civilization, and any attempts to go round or through the surrounding woods always leads them back to the same spot, right next to a rusted no swimming sign. There is also no concept of time, for the sun is always shining high in the sky, and a number of distorted noises come in at regular intervals. What's more, they start seeing a sinister hooded figure that may also be one of the many other versions of themselves that are wandering about thanks to the warped nature of this bizarre time pocket. Though it is certainly one of those films that you can tell was made on a severely limited budget, right down to the two-person cast and an entirely on-location shoot in the middle of the woods, Brightwood makes the most of its circumstances by doing whatever it can to feel more ambitious than it would have otherwise been allowed to be. Elkar, who also served as the cinematographer on this film, as well as the editor, writer and producer alongside lead actor Max Wertendyke, captures a decent number of crisp, atmospheric shots of the desolate woodland area that we, and the protagonists, are unable to escape from. There's something unnerving about the constant daylight, which Elkar also turns into a sinister presence with its bright, almost blinding light that shuns visual effects, most likely because the production couldn't afford them, to rely solely on natural resources to generate an increasingly hot-tempered environment. It's also a film that lives or dies on the strength of its two central and only performances. But luckily, both Max Wertendyke and Dana Berger are more than up for the challenge. The actors put in deeply unnerved turns as a couple who, when we first meet them, are so openly spiteful of one another that you're instantly uncomfortable being around them as they hash out their differences during petty arguments. Berger, in particular, is on fiery form as the Orange is the New Black veteran wastes no opportunity to lay into a slobby partner, with insults and put-downs as sharp as her thousand-yard stare of death. And as the film goes along, their relationship becomes more central in some tender dialogue scenes where both actors get the chance to convey some suppressed emotions and thoughts in tender and humanistic ways. Then, of course, when things get more and more trippy as the psychological effects of this time loop become increasingly apparent, Elkar and his two leads effectively show the severe frustrations of being stuck in a seemingly inescapable situation. One memorable moment sees Wertendyke's Dan breaking down in laughter as he and Berger's Jen find themselves once again by that no swimming sign. And it's not just a compelling piece of acting on the part of Wertendyke, but also an interesting play by the filmmaker, who here puts on full display the genuine fear that these people, as awkward and volatile as they can be, might not exactly make it out of this with their lives, or at the very least their sanity, intact. A few unexpected turns later on involving other versions of the same people in this loop are also compelling in their unpredictability, for you're never sure which version of Jen or Dan we're actually following, right up until their motives become very apparent. As often is the case with low-budget mind-bending horrors like this, Brightwood retains a sense of ambiguity as it reaches a shocking climax, but there are certain things that are left too much to the audience's imagination, which despite concluding things on a sensical note, does still seem like more needed to be explained about certain things. For what it does leave the viewer with, though, the film is an impressively tight horror film that proves no matter how limited the resources, the time loop concept can be used to create some truly engaging cinema. So to sum up, Brightwood is a mind-bending fusion of the time loop concept with the Marriage on the Rocks drama by way of a psychological horror, and it blends all those elements together fairly well on a low budget that allows for some thoughtful filmmaking and a pair of unnerved lead performances. And I'm giving this 4 stars out of 5. So that was my review for Brightwood, and once again, thank you so much to Dane Alcar, Dana Berger, and Max Wertendyke for joining me on this episode. And thank you very much, dear listener, for listening to it all, and I hope that you enjoyed it, and I hope that you managed to check out the film on your own terms when it arrives on digital platforms from the 21st of March. So once again, I'm your film chef extraordinaire, Jack Martin, whetting your appetite for film each and every week. That's all for now. See you next time.